Welcome to the Creativity Cafe for the creatively adventurous and the relentlessly curious.
We have inspiring conversations with creative women from all over the world.
I'm Paige Baldwinando, and I'm a creativity coach who helps people maximize their creative potential, and I'm also a writer.
And I'm Jordana Matsuda. I'm an illustrator on my creative journey, with Paige helping me along the way.
We're both long-term residents of Japan, a country bursting with creative energy that inspires us every day.
So go grab a cup of tea and join us in discovering new creative landscapes here on the Creativity Cafe.
Hi, Jordana.
Hello, Paige.
So just today, you taught me a new word in Japanese that I had never heard before, and I just love it. Will you tell everyone what you taught me and what it means?
Yeah, it's the word merihari. And it means, it's one of my favorite Japanese expressions because I can never quite find the right English word without, you know, giving a whole explanation, which basically means the ups and downs of something. But mm-hmm. From my understanding, it's more like the natural up and down flow of something. Mm. Ups and downs feels a bit basic, the basic version of it. And I just feel like it encapsulates so many aspects of life, child rearing, creativity.
Yeah, totally.
Ups and downs of life. Yeah.
Right. Because like stuff happens, you know,
yeah.
Things are going well.
Why did you like that word?
Well, because first of all, it's pretty. It's interesting. It's an interesting word. I think Japanese has so many interesting words and phonetically like that that feel playful, and this feels like a playful word. Yes. Merihari, right? Yeah. And even built into the word feels like almost like an undulation up and down. Mm. Merihari, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And yeah, that concept of the variation and it being encapsulated into one word where we feel it, right? Like we feel like, oh, there's this natural variation. The fact that there's a word for it means it's a thing that just happens.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not a big deal. Like it's just part of life, you know? And so, yeah, like I really feel kind of fascinated by this concept that, you know, it's built into pretty much everything. Like you said, child rearing, creating, cooking, like anything you were doing, it's just like, it has its ups and downs.
Yep. Truly does.
Yeah. So do you find with your creativity that it has its ups and downs, like in particular ways, like a pattern that you notice, or how is that for you?
Yeah. I feel like, the flow is, it's kind of consistent until it's not. And then suddenly it just drops. So I'm like, I'm really into something, or I'm really inspired by a certain thing, and I'll run with that for as long as it takes me. And then I kind of feel like, oh, what should I do now? So mm-hmm. It kind of, you know, it can leave me feeling a bit lost sometimes if I'm not feeding my kind of creativity, which I often am, but there's so much inspiration around me, sometimes I can get a bit overwhelmed by it as well. So I think it's like channeling that feeling of, it's separating the feelings of being inspired by something and wanting to make something that is inspired by that thing. Like, it's not always the same thing as what I want to make.
Yeah.
The inspirational aspects versus what I actually want to make aren't always connected, but I feel often that they are. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah. It does.
I think I'm not listening to myself enough. I think that's probably what the crux of it is. Mm-hmm. Like being so inspired by everything around me. There's so much around, isn't there? So sometimes I think I need to stop looking around me and just take a moment and by myself to remember what I want to make,
Yeah.
and what inspires me and what sparks my kind of joy of visual, visual things that I love to see. I want to make, things that I love to look at. So separating those things, yeah, it's a bit tricky sometimes for me.
What helps you do that, like to go in that way?
For me, I have like a little ritual, to be honest.
Oh, I love
So,
that.
yeah, I do. I start off with, I just have a little, just to kind of calm my body, really. I flick through a magazine. I love Breathe magazine. So I read a few articles from there. And then I will go to my desk. I will light some candles. I will usually pull a tarot card. Or an oracle card or something, and just kind of said that helps me to kind of center myself and kind of just breathe into my intuition that way, really, and then just see what happens from there. Yeah, it's a good starting point when I'm like, oh, I don't know where to start today. That really helps for me.
Yeah, I think those kinds of rituals are so valuable. Like more than we know. It seems like simple and like not a big deal, but it actually is a message to yourself, like, okay, we're doing this now. This is what we're doing,
Yeah.
you know? And those are so valuable to get you into that mindset and like the body state of like, okay, you know, this is what I'm doing. I'm
Yeah.
gonna go in, I'm gonna see what's there, I'm gonna explore and play.
How about when you're doing your writing, do you have like a specific way you get into that, or
Yeah, I do too.
what do you do?
So it depends a little bit on my situation because I live in a crowded environment. There are lots of people in a small space
Yeah.
in my Tokyo apartment. But when I'm able to be alone, I do something very similar actually with like clearing the space, lighting a candle, and very often I will write in my journal first and kind of get out whatever is like at the top of my mind, you
Okay.
know, kind of junk stuff that's just floating, you know. So that for two reasons. One is like it's kind of a verbal clearing, you know, of like pulling myself out of the mundane by getting the mundane out, you know. And then there's also the piece of just like journaling helps me to go in, you know. It's like, okay, so where am I now? What am I feeling? What's happening? You know. And then from there, I can become more settled in myself and move on to whatever the project is that I want to be working on.
It's interesting that we both need that like clearing time to start off with, to kind of just calm the mind, calm the body, in order to like be open to starting something new, or
Yeah.
releasing that creative energy.
Yeah. And I think, you know, beyond just like the daily kind of ups and downs of creativity, there are larger ones over the span of our lives too, right? Like,
Yes. Yeah.
you know, where sometimes we're in a place where we're just riding that roller coaster up and it's like, it's happening, we're doing it, you know? And then there are times where it's just not happening for whatever reason, whether that's because we're super busy with other things or because I don't know, it's just like a season of winter, you know, a creative winter, a dormancy happening. That can happen too.
Yeah.
So today we're speaking with our friend and a really super interesting artist and creativity coach, Caroline Story, who talks about this Medihari nature of her creative journey through the course of her life, and particularly over the last 20 years or so, which is, I found it just to be a really interesting conversation.
Yeah, it really was. To hear her talk about her journey, and sometimes she's in a creative incubator, sometimes she wants to show people her work, and sometimes she doesn't want to show people her work, and just to hear her talk about it really made me think as well, like, oh, being a creative working on your own at home is tough. Like, mentally it's kind of tough to channel all those different feelings and notice them when they come up, like not to get down on yourself about it, but to notice it. And yeah, and like you're both, you know, creativity coaches. So for me, it was like really interesting to listen to you two talk about it in a way that's maybe different than an artist would talk about it by themselves, because not all, I would never think about it as objectively, like, okay, this is happening right now because of X, Y, and Z. Like, I would be like, oh my God, why can't I do this? Why is this not working? Like, what should I do? Like, I think we all have that instinct, okay, I'm going to just like walk away for a bit, but I wouldn't know why. I wouldn't know what to do about it. So listening to you to, you know, the tips and like ideas that you have to deal with that was really, really interesting for me.
Yeah, and it's so helpful, right, to like just take that one small step back to observe what's happening. You know, there's so much power in that, and just like observing, oh, okay, this is what's happening in my mind, you know, where we're not tied to it, like this is me thinking these thoughts, right? But we can just observe the thoughts from a one step removed. Then it becomes the grip that those thoughts have on us becomes much less tight and much more manageable.
I think I think it does need some training, though. I don't think you can just do it once
I agree.
and remember to do it again next time, because I certainly don't, even though, you know, just, you know, personally, we've had conversations about it and I'm still like,
I really think it's a practice. And like anything else we practice, you know, it takes some time to get to a place where it feels a little easier. I don't think that those kinds of thoughts ever stop. I think that we just get better at noticing them and paying attention to them and realizing, oh, okay, that's not the like truth. You know, it's just a thought. It doesn't have to mean anything unless I make it mean something. And I can choose not to, you know, I can choose to say, oh, there is a fear thought, or there is, you know, an unhelpful thought. I'm gonna just let it go and see what happens. It's easier said than done, which is why the practice part is really helpful. Just like meditation, I think it's quite similar to meditation, really noticing thoughts, and rather than like trying to chase after them with a butterfly net, you know, like letting them float along and letting them be what they are without attaching meaning to them.
Yeah, I guess like that's, you know, I guess that's the benefit of having a coach. It's not only the processing of those thoughts, but yeah, just having someone to talk to about your work that you trust to help bring that clarity as well. Because I do find it a lonely lonely pursuit at times. That's, you know, that's why I'm so grateful for our friendship, but also doing this podcast, it really helps me to think about my processes and how and why these things come up when they do, etc.
I think having creative companions, you know, creative companionship is just beyond valuable. It's so important to be connected to other people who get it and who have experienced the same things and who can tell you it's normal, it's okay, you know, and be there with you in it. Community, you know, creative community is so helpful on every level, whether that's a one-on-one situation or a group situation, you know.
Because, like, you know, if you work in a company or in an office or, you know, amongst other people every day, you know, you're constantly getting little bits of feedback or, you know, through, you know, passive conversation or what have you. You can figure out, okay, this is normal. Okay, this is this. But yeah, working from home, you don't get that as much.
It really can be isolating, and it can just sometimes feel like you crave that connection with other people and the fun of it. Just the fun of being able to talk about creativity. That's something that we have really learned about in this podcast, like how much fun it is just to like be with it in conversation, you know?
And even just like create it, trying to create your own community. Like if, you know, we've all been through this pandemic, so everyone's had this experience now of working from home or what have you. But sometimes we do have to make that bit of extra effort to find our people. Maybe people who you previously thought were your people might not. You might, over the pandemic, a lot of people realized, oh,
And that's why I really like to offer like what Caroline actually mentions it in the interview, this co-creation time meeting that I have every week where people can come over Zoom and we meet and we talk about what we're going to do creatively. And then we mute our mics and we do our thing. And at the end, we come back and talk about it. And there's something about it, even though like we're not talking to each other through the process of what we're doing. We're meeting just at the beginning and just at the end, but there's still this beautiful community that comes from it where we feel not only like less alone, but there's also like a momentum.
You it's know? Like a shared energy, isn't there?
Right. Do you even find that? You're not
close. Yeah, when you come? Yeah. I do. Yeah. Yeah. It's like a shared energy of like, of making.
And you're riding this beautiful wave together. And then at the end, you get to share. Here's what I did. What did you do? You know, it's really fun.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm so excited to share this conversation with Caroline because she is just lovely, isn't she?
She is. Yeah, I love talking to her.
Me too. So let's listen in to our conversation with Caroline's story. Originally from the UK, Caroline's story now makes her home on the stunningly beautiful Vancouver Island in British Columbia, Canada. After years of working with stitching on paper, Caroline is currently in the midst of a shift where she's exploring other creative pulls. Her current interest is in expressing feelings and experiences through a variety of shapes, deconstructing images, and then stitching them together again to reimagine them. Caroline is also a creativity coach and brings her characteristic vivaciousness and verve to her creative community, both online and off. Welcome, Caroline.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank
Hello.
You for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So we ask every guest the same question to start off with. Caroline, can you tell us, what's your first memory of doing something creative?
My first memory would be, I think, drawing. Drawing was something I would do on rainy days. So I wasn't a overly creative kid. I don't think I even really met creativity until quite late in life. But my dad really loved drawing. And he encouraged drawing a lot. And so I remember just sitting and drawing off of books and stuff, particularly animals and cartoon characters and stuff. So that's one of my big memories of him. And he would bring in like books to help me and like different pencils and stuff. So he really supported that in me. So it was a really nice bonding thing that we did.
That sounds lovely.
Yeah, it's a nice memory, actually. Thank you for asking that question.
What do you think drew you to like the animals and cartoons? Is there something about that particularly that interested you, or is that just what happened to be there?
It just happened. I had a book that I bought with some money that I'd won. I'd won a book voucher for a drawing competition at primary school. And so I remember I bought two books, and I think it felt quite special because it was the first time that I'd done that myself. And I bought the World Encyclopedia of Animals, I think it was called. It was quite a thick book. And then I also bought the Chronicles of Narnia, I remember. So I think it was just because it was a special book in that way that it was mine. And then we also had these really special Disney books. They were really lovely, really hard cover, and so I would copy characters out of that just to sort of learn how to draw. The thing with it though is, creatively wise, I was trying to think, was that creative because you're copying? But I think it was just learning that skill And also what I loved was how I felt doing it. I was quite an antsy kid. I used to find it hard to settle, I think. But those times when I did do things like that, it was that settled feeling, focus. And so it's that that creativity brings me now when it's when I'm in it. So I think it had that same feeling.
There's like a calmness.
A calmness, yes. Mm. Yes.
And there's peace to it too, right? That like, okay, I'm focused on this. Nothing else needs to be happening around. I don't need to think about it. I'm just doing this.
Yeah, you're not questioning yourself. I was quite a questioning kid, I think. I think I worried even as a kid and stuff. So definitely it was something that, yeah, you were focused on it. And it was quite simple in that way. You just have to, you know, feel with your hand and check where you're going and stuff. And it's a simple act, right, but a rewarding act, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, like connected with yourself. Mm.
Yeah.
So will you tell us a little bit more about how you got to where you are today creatively from that place where you were drawing animals from the lovely book?
Well, then there was like many, many years in between. And I mean, yeah, I think to where I am now, I would say it started in around 2005. And that's when my husband and I were moving across Canada. And it was just a time when I think it's a big drive across Canada. And so you get lots of time to think. Again, it's that all responsibilities taken away from you. You really just, you just have one job to do. And I find that it's a really good place for me to think and not to worry, but just to get into those thoughts more. And I started to just look at the landscape, but also I was really interested in textiles was growing then. And so we were doing some thrifting and stuff. And so when we got out west, that's when I sort of just started to mess around with sewing and collecting textiles. And I think that's where I started to get that feeling again, that really sort of, well, calm but excited as well. I loved color and just putting really bright fabrics together with solid blocks of color. And I had a bit of a mentor friend that I met, and she just really encouraged me to start sewing, and she taught me the basics, and that just really helped to talk with someone about little dreams that you have, because they're little seeds of dreams, aren't they, at that time. And she was just to have someone just go, yeah, you can do that, and here, let me help you, and I've picked up these fabrics for you, just having someone to help you along. So I did that, and then I turned them into tea cozies and I sold those at the market. And then I wanted to start making my own fabric. I was starting to feel a bit constrained by just finding fabrics. And so I'd make my own stamps, and I love doing that. I love making my own designs and again, messing around with color. And then I think it was my husband who said to me, you really don't like making more than one of anything. And it was so true. I'd get quite moody. Like, oh, now I've got to make more of these. I was really bad at that sort of just, and now you know, you've got the design and now you make more, which is obviously the idea. and I didn't, and I got grumpy and I made stupid mistakes and I got really perfectionist about it. And so I think I took a break because I had children during that time. Sorry, this story does go on. And then when I came back to it, I didn't want to do more than one. I wanted to just do one. And that's when the pictures started. And I was just, I had a poem that I wanted to do a little illustration for. And that's when the stitch pictures started, of just like cutting up fabric. And then I started making a person. And then I realized I could stitch on paper. And that was just, that was mind blown. Like just that all coming together. I remember the first picture I did. I remember how it felt. I remember how precious it felt as well. It was, you know, as each part started to work out and I could see where it could go, I was just, it was just like this little chick that I really wanted to keep safe. And I just knew it was special, I guess. And so, yeah, and that's when I started doing stitch pictures.
What a beautiful image that is.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And it's those highs, eh, of the creative process. Mm-hmm. It's when you get that those moments where all the foggy comes together. When I look back, I think, oh, well, it looks like I was heading a certain way. You know, there was sewing fabrics, making fabrics. But you never know when you're in it what on earth's going on. You're just sort of following the wants. Mm-hmm. Oh, I want to do this, or I want to do that. And then if you follow those, they end up coming together.
Yeah.
But there's it's the highs and lows, I guess. So yeah, it was. I remember telling a friend about it, even like almost like a whisper. And it was like, I've got this thing. It's really exciting. So yeah, that's kind of where that started. I was doing that for about 7 years, the stitch pictures.
It's really interesting to, oh, sorry,
Paige. No, you go ahead.
It's so, I really love listening to your story because it's lovely to hear about how it all, you know, evolved from one thing to where you are now. Like that journey and that adventure and that exploration. That's the wonderful thing about creativity, isn't it? You never know where, you know, your next, you know, want might take you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're right. Creative adventure is such a great way of saying it. It really is an adventure. You feel like you stepped out into something, into some unknown. And the people you meet along the way and, you know, the different directions you go. It's one of the most exciting things that I've done for myself. Just saying yes to that and being able to say yes to that.
You make it sound so easy, but sometimes it can be difficult to say yes to those things, hey? Because like you said, you kind of whispered to your friend, oh, I'm doing this. But like there is that sense of you're doing like, you know, creative side project or a creative project that you feel a bit like it's a secret, or, you know, should you be doing it or shouldn't you be doing it? So to, you know, to say yes and go forward with it is, yeah, it's a powerful thing, isn't it?
It is. And I think the struggles start to come at that fine line between when you're doing it and then when you're showing it. Mm. And I think it's that sort of dance of wanting to show the world and then stepping back to yourself and then wanting to show the world. It's that vulnerability that comes in, I think. Mm-hmm. Because there's this weird want to show people. But I think that is where some of the obstacles start to come as well.
Yeah.
Because then the outside world gets sort of mixed up with your inner world, and it's learning to negotiate that. So, and that's probably why it's taken me, you know, 2005. How long has that been? There's some math involved there.
Let's not count.
My hair was brown when I started. A lot has happened. Yes. Yeah, so it's
Well, and you know, it really is. It's such a you can lose yourself and your sense of time in it because it is such an ecological or like beautiful evolution unfolding. Like why did I say the word ecological? I feel like there was a reason. Like there's this ecosystem of it that you're part of. You're just part of it. And you look up and it's like, oh, things have changed. I'm still here doing this thing. You know, it's this, I don't know, really beautiful loss of time that also just feels so natural and so right as we're doing it.
Yeah.
Then 18 years can go by.
Well, in the height of it, I think I feel my most self when it's all coming together. That's when I'm like, yes, this is really speaking to me, and it's a outside expression of what I'm feeling and what I love to look at. And then when it's messy and ugly, that's also that feeling of, no, this isn't expressing what I wanted at all. Mm. This doesn't feel right. Mm-hmm. So I guess there's that conversation as well between yourself. But that sort of, when it feels like harmony with yourself, wow, that's a great feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now you're in this place of exploring in a new way, it sounds like. Will you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah. So I guess what happened with the Stitch pictures is it started to feel more heavy and like I was forcing it. And I guess I'd moved on somehow or wanted to try something new. And it was getting hard to get into the studio. And so this was last year. Last year seemed to take its toll a bit. I just felt like I'd lost the me in my creativity somewhere. And so then I started this year just kind of clean slate. And I took everything off my walls and it felt amazing. It felt really good to just sort of say, okay, well, let's see what comes. And so I've just started messing around with paint on canvas. I'm interested in shapes. I'm interested in water. I go swimming in the ocean quite a bit and I love how I feel when I'm doing that. So there's something about wanting to have that in my creativity as well. It's exciting. It's calm at the same time. So I guess I'm trying to find that feeling in my work.
Mm.
And at the moment, it looks a big old mess in here. Just looking around.
That's how it is.
Like a crazy person.
Yeah.
I've got a wall of, I cleared all my walls, but I have one space where I just put up anything that's calling to me. Because I really was starting from nothing really. But I put up some pictures of where I swim and I've put up some words. And then I did some sketchbook messy stuff with collage. And I just went for it without any thoughts of what will this be or any outside thoughts. And so I've been putting things like that up and it's like a creative murder scene, really. but it's starting to, you know, in all the mess and stuff, I can see that it's starting to grow in some way, even though I can't articulate right now where it's going. I can see the developments happening. So it's definitely put that excitement and curiosity and just got back into that mode for myself. So that's pretty exciting and scary. And I have a friend that I'll go, oh God, I don't know what I'm doing. Oh God, I've got a show in April. but it's good. And I've really got back to just following the wants. And they really are simple wants. It's like, go mix some green, Caroline, or getting back to the simplicity of it and see what comes, I guess.
So it sounds like you're kind of like following your intuition more. Is that when you're in the studio, that's kind of how it unfolds for you? Would you say?
Yeah, really basically, yeah. I used to follow my intuition with the Stitch pictures and then it started to leave me a bit. And so now, yeah, I'm trying to follow that intuition. With the Stitch pictures, I felt like I knew more of where it was going. It came out as a tangible thing quite quickly, whereas this feels a lot less tangible. And so I have to be really gentle with myself and be okay with that. And so, yeah, my intuition is there, but it really is small nudges. It is, let's do a square here. Or I like that shape. It is very, very back to basics at the moment.
Yeah, I think it's like that part is very delicate, right? Like there's a sensitivity to ourselves in our feeling of like, okay, I'm exploring here and I don't know what might happen. And I feel a little sensitive as I do it. And then there's a delicacy to just like the relationship between us and the work is still so new and fresh and tender and young, right? Like a, I don't know, a burgeoning garden, like a very small sprout or something like that.
Yeah, that's a, what did you say? Did you say delicate?
Yeah, delicate.
Yeah, that was a really nice way of putting it. Yeah. And I know that, so I have to be really gentle. Mm-hmm. It's all gentle in here. As soon as it becomes cross or frustrated, I take myself away now. It's just, that's not what this is about. And so your use of the word delicate kind of makes sense for that. I don't want to put any of that stress on it. So yeah, I like that word.
Yeah. Well, and I really like, part of what I really like about your work and really resonate with in the way you communicate and the way you interact with your community is that you do that, like where you're so lovely around like not stressing. And like, we don't have to stress, right? We don't have to put that on ourselves, and we don't have to be in that place of worrying or being hard on ourselves. And you've started doing this offering that of doodle sessions with your community. And when I don't get to go to them because I'm not physically near you, but, and I'm also asleep when you're doing them. I think you do them online too, right? But they're, I think you're bringing some of that into your doodle sessions, this like lightness that you have. So I'm wondering if you could tell us a little more about that, about the sessions and about the spirit that you bring into them and why it's important to you to do that.
Yeah, it's been interesting. The doodles are like this sort of side package that just happened. I think it was just before the, I'm really sorry, I seem to be losing my voice. Sorry.
It's okay.
A side package with, I wanted to offer something to my subscribers. And so I was doing a doodle. And then as we went into the pandemic, I was surprised at how much I look forward to doing the doodles. Again, it was that sort of focus, you know, I have this thing to do. So I could put away the worries of stuff, you know, that were coming in. Yeah, they were very centering. They were a great way for me to reflect. I could put a bit of a funny twist on things that were going on, I guess, just to kind of keep a lighter mood in a pretty heavy time, I guess, for people. And then I guess with the pandemic, I was like, I knew what it was bringing for me. And I wondered if anyone else wanted to come along and do it with me. And yeah, I was surprised at how much people got from it, even from a Zoom, just to give yourself that time. It's, you know, I would do it on Wednesdays at noon for where I am. It's just such a non-day. It's a middle of the week. It's the middle of that day. And I just thought, what a cool little, just taking a break for yourself just for an hour, which we don't really do, especially if you're not with a creative practice or anything. I don't think people give themselves the time to have that, just a bit of peace and quiet. It's a bit like your co-creates page. I love those. They just, you know, there's a showing up, but then it's just for you. And so that's what the doodles are. I give a prompt for anyone that needs it, but it is completely like show up as you are, bring something to draw with, the piece of paper, and having the word doodle really helps people, because I think as soon as you say draw, pretty much if you say draw anything, but if you say doodle, it can be anything. You know, a doodle is writing a word, a doodle is a shape, a doodle is a quick sketch. It's whatever you want it to be. And so you take away that expectation and that pressure, and then what comes? And then it's been really amazing what has come for people. Some people have been able to set intentions for themselves, but some people just really enjoy having that calm time of, even if they're just drawing a cup, but they love the way to move their hands. And it just comes through the body, the shoulders go down, you know, the head opens up more and stuff. And it's surprised me as much as the people that attend as well. So I really love the doodle, the power of the doodle.
Mm-hmm.
Something so simple, but that can, you can just give yourself 10 minutes time in a day just to relax into something different than everything else that we do.
Mm-hmm. I think there's something really soothing about when you are doing something creative in a group as well, isn't there? Like, because, you know, creative work is, you know, usually or often it's like just yourself making something. So to be able to be with other people who, you know, they're probably for the same similar reasons, you're all there in that group together, you know, at that time. Yeah, it must be very soothing. And like, I love the reframe of doodle because, yeah, you know, sometimes starting a drawing can feel, like you say, it can feel, oh, what should I draw? What, you know, you overthink it a bit too much. Whereas, you know, doodle, we've done that since we were kids, haven't we? Just
even the word is playful.
Yeah, right? yeah. It's a cute word, isn't it?
Yeah. I was talking to an artist actually about the doodles, and he was like, oh God, I used to doodle all the time, he was saying. And then he realized that he used to doodle when he was on the phone. And I think he realized that he's just not on the phone in that way. We're not stuck in one place anymore on the phone like we used to be. Yeah. We don't have as many phone conversations as we used to. So it was interesting to hear him talk about how much he used to doodle, and thinking about, yeah, I just don't do that anymore. And
that's so true. Yeah, because if I'm on the phone, I'm usually walking around and doing something. But I just, you know, I remember being, you know, in my teenage years or 20s, like sitting down on the phone, doodling away for, like, you know, a good hour or so. Yeah. In school, doodling in my notebook. Yeah, you know, always doodling.
We're not often stuck in a place, are we? Sort of thing where we have to do it. And we may have weirdly missed out on things because you have to use that time. It's that you can't do anything else but wait or sit there, be there or whatever. Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, there's a lot to be said for that. There's a lot to be said for that, you know, boredom time, or the time that we would have found, you know, just like watching people in the grocery store while you stand in the line, or, you know, the, I don't know, things that we're now looking at our phone, or we're now talking to someone else, or we're, I don't know, that we're not, those in between times are those times when we're stuck in a place, like you said. There are so, I don't know that there are fewer of them, but just that we've filled them with other things. And there isn't this, like, you know, in between, what should I do with myself kind of feeling as much as there used to be in the old days when we were young.
Well, looking after my daughter as well, that's when it started up again, when I started the Stitch Pictures, because I was sort of hanging out with her, and she was quite a calm kid, and she would just sort of toddle around and stuff. And so that gave me sort of calm time, and I would be, like, words would come in my mind and poems would come in my mind and stuff. I sort of need that particular atmosphere where I'm sort of doing something, but it's not a real doing. You know, I don't have an excuse of, we always have to be productive, eh? So I guess if I feel like I'm doing something of value, but it doesn't take anything, that's kind of a great creative time for me. Like, I can go off in my mind and think of things and...
Yeah, that's such a good point that, you know, there's something about those situations where you are doing something, but it doesn't take all of you. Like, you're kind of doing it in the background, right? That you can then sink into a more creative space in your mind and see what's in there, play with it.
Well, that's the fun part for us, isn't it?
Yeah,
we kind of look forward to those times of waiting and being bored, because that's when, you know, you get a bit of peace to yourself to come up with ideas and stuff.
So, Caroline, I know you also do creativity coaching. So, thinking about your coaching, can you tell us a bit like how your training experience as a creativity coach has impacted your own creative work as well?
Sometimes I see myself as two different people. I feel a confidence when I'm coaching, and then when I come into the studio as a creative, I don't quite have that same confidence. But I think what the coaching has shown me is acceptance of more things. I find the gentler I am on myself and the more accepting of things as they come, then you're not in conflict with your creativity. I think I used to be in more conflict with it, which creates its own problems, or it means that problems will last longer because you make more of them. So I've sort of seeing that if I can just accept things as they are, then I can move forward easier. I also think talking about your work is so valuable. I think I see that with my clients as and me being coached, but also having friends who understand where you're coming from. I see such value in that, being able to talk to someone about your work really helps you to get clarity on it, because a lot of the time is by ourselves and we live in our heads quite a lot. When you have to articulate something, or you have to explain something or show something, it helps you to then see why you're doing what you're doing, sometimes that you may not have seen before. And sometimes it takes someone else to put the threads together for you to make sense. So I find there's real value in sharing that with people that you trust. That's the only thing. Someone else who's a creative is good too, like to share what you're going through and to see that, you know, all the ups and downs are totally normal. Totally normal. They're part of it.
They're part of it. Exactly. There is,
you know, they, yes, that's right. I feel bad when I'm coaching and a client says, I feel this and I feel that. And I'm like, congratulations. You're in the process.
That's right.
Yay.
Exactly.
It's, yeah, that is all part of it. And so the more you talk with people, the more you understand that. So that, I think those have been helpful for me with my own practice. But I'm, you know, it's so much easier to always see it for someone else. And then I'll be in here and go, oh, I was doing that for the last 2 days. Right. So, you know, that's why I sometimes see myself as two different people, really.
Well, and I think what you're saying is so important is that when we have another person, especially another creative person who understands how it goes, how the process is, to reflect to us, reflect back to us what's happening, there is a new understanding and a new sense of a just okayness with what is happening that sometimes can be really hard to get on your own.
Totally.
Yeah.
And we're so hard on ourselves, eh? That's the other I mean, I don't know. Do you feel you're hard on yourself?
I think most people are. Yeah. More people than not. Especially women, we're socialized to be hard on ourselves. You know, it's part of what we're taught, explicitly taught to do. You know? Like find out where you're at fault and fix it. You know. Yeah.
Introducing our work with a real big sorry. I'm sorry, oh, I've done this. Yeah. Yeah, we are. We're very critical of ourselves. And that gets in the way too. It sort of, it can really stop you from just moving through things, or, you know, I don't know, just giving up too early if you get too critical, I guess. It's the paralyzingness.
It's very paralyzing, isn't it? It's like, well, you know, because there's shame. Like, shame gets introduced. Shame has entered the chat, and it's like, it's not nice, and it's not pretty, and it's not a thing that helps you feel more like you want to do stuff. It shuts you down. It makes you want to hide. It, you know, creates this, I just, you know, if I could just get smaller, if I could just be smaller, if I could just shrink to nothing, like, you know, then no one would be able to see me. And, you know, like, it would, it's just so difficult to move anywhere or do anything once that has happened. And when we do have an outside force, a loving, gentle, present outside force there to say, hey, it's okay, it's normal, that's part of the deal, congratulations, you know, it helps a lot.
Another thing that I found useful is identifying those voices as well, because the inner critic, it can be a few different voices. I found that really interesting to do as well. It's what personality of mine is talking right now? Mm-hmm. You know, is it the big businesswoman who's starting to talk, but she's come in at the creative time? Is it the, I don't know who else, is it the teacher that you had, or the boss that you used to have who's talking right now? Who, sometimes we have these different voices and different criticisms, and it's really cool to kind of just look at them from an observing perspective rather than a personal perspective, and to say, oh, that's interesting, who's chatting right now about this, and then you can catch them earlier rather than feeling like they're true. You know who's turned up to the tea table. And,
right.
Pour them a cup of tea and say, it's all right, just, you're not needed right now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It helps so much to give them their own sort of faces or personalities or names. That's something I often do with my clients as a coach, is like, okay, let's name this part. Let's like describe it. Let's talk about its personality. What are its limitations? You know, like, someone who's coming in as the inner critic who is a business person, let's say, might have limitations inherently. You know, is it somebody who we want to be part of this aspect of the process? Because that actually, that voice might actually be really useful in a different part of the process. You know?
Yes. And actually, I don't know if you found that. Yeah. Have you found that too? That a lot of them, they're not bad voices. They're just at the wrong time.
Right.
And they've turned up at the wrong time. So they're all confused and angry and scared. And it's like, okay, yeah, it's all right. Calm down. You can show up when,
right, yeah. It happens so often with writing, right? When you're writing something and the editor wants to come in and be like, typo, that's a typo. Excuse me. Go back and fix that right now. And, you know, like, I don't actually need you right now, buddy. Okay. Editing time will be later. Thank you. You know?
I love that. I'm going to keep that voice. Even when I'm paid, I'm going to go, typo.
Typo.
Fix it now.
Jordana, typo. That's brilliant.
So I'm curious, Caroline, what is like really exciting to you right now creatively? Like, is there something that is just lighting you up that feels really fun that you're working on at the moment?
So whatever this is, as I gesture with large arms to the wall, whatever this is, really is lighting me up. Mm-hmm. I was looking through some things yesterday, I think a Uppercase magazine, and it was on quilts. And I knew somehow that quilts were coming into this as well. I was being inspired by quilting, and I'd sort of seen some free form and intuitive quilting, which I love. And anyway, there was some more of that, and I was able to go down and find a new artist and stuff. And oh my God, I was just so excited. just in the evening, just finding all the stuff and going, yes, this is calling to me. And it just gave me a like skip in my step when I came to the studio, knowing that I had something new to bring to what I was working on. And so I'm cutting up canvas and I'm looking at putting like a fake binding around, but to use that as some blocks of color and stuff. And so that, yeah. And I go up and down with that, with this project. It'll feel like I'm a bit lost, but then something comes and I find the universe does that. Eh?
Mm-hmm.
You just see something new and it's that electric feeling of like, yes. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, hold that and then bring it to your project and then see what it means for you. So yeah, that was pretty, it's a good day to talk. Because I had that today, so yeah, I was in happy land today.
Mm-hmm. I'm just like listening to this as we've gone through this whole conversation, Caroline. I'm interested, like, to hear how different do you think you would have been had you stayed in the UK? Like, do you feel like living in Canada has brought out this creative side of you, or just being in a different country, or like, how do you feel like being outside of the UK has affected that part of you?
Yeah, I wouldn't be doing any of this if I was in the UK, because it wasn't really my brand. That wasn't it wasn't on the cards that I would do that. And I think in the UK I had things that fulfilled me. Like there are things that I love over there, so I think I would have felt it would have been fed in that way.
Mm.
Whereas I think when I moved, I didn't have those same things that were filling me up, which I didn't realize. And then over here, like, we moved to the West Coast of Canada and there's such a huge arts community and there's such a cool, just give it a go sort of energy here. And because I wasn't defined as anything, I could kind of do whatever I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
There was that, and there was time to do that as well, because we were sort of moving and just arrived in a new place. So there were, you know, just seeing new things and meeting artists and seeing new creations. And things were just sort of starting up as well. The, you know, the internet was kind of wonky, hey? But then as soon as you got sort of the starts of platforms, that just really opened my eyes to all these artisans. And just to be able to see that, it just called to me. And I happened to be in a space where I could say yes to those things. Whereas I think you have to have things a bit shifted for yourself, or kind of tumbled around for you to find that. Because you really see things differently when you move to a new country, and you see your home differently as well. It sort of opens your eyes differently. So just having a new way of seeing just inspired me to start making, and yeah, and in an environment that allowed for that as well.
Mm. It does seem like when we, you know, obviously we've spoken to lots of women from all over the world, and it does feel like when you move away from, you know, the country you've lived in your whole life, the expectations you have on yourself or others have on you, they kind of disappear, which gives you that freedom to think, or to even, you know, consider, you know, so many new things. Like, what could I do? Like, what do I really want to do? Like, where do I want to, you know, invest my time? Or, and yeah, and I know, like, the UK is where I feel like I always felt the pressure to kind of be productive with my art that I was doing, as opposed to be, you know, explorative with it. There was so much expectation about career, or, I mean, buying a house or this or that or the other, which felt a bit suffocating, I think, for my creativity back then. So I really relate to what you're saying. Yeah.
Because did you follow your career? Because you went to art school.
Yeah, no, I didn't. So I went to art school, and then when I came here, you know, it's just going to be for a year, ended up, you know, nearly, you know, 20. But Yeah, I was teaching. I've been teaching for the last 15 years. So, because that was, you know, what I could do at that time. So, yeah, in the last 3 or 4 years, that's when I started to get back to my art and be in a space, you know, where I feel like I have that freedom again.
Yeah, you feel you can say yes to it now.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that wonderful?
It is, it really is. I feel like it's such a like it's such a joy and such a it feels like a privilege in a way, like because of the way society's built, you know, that we can't always get to say yes. So when we can, it's just like, oh my God, yes, let's take this and run with it and, you know, feel all the feels that goes along with it.
Yeah, well, yeah, good for you for doing that. Yeah, it's very vulnerable, isn't it? Saying yes.
It is, yeah. Feels like it should be easy, doesn't it? But it's not always, yeah. Especially once you get have a family and stuff. But I'm
Yeah.
lucky.
And you're like, why isn't this easy?
Exactly,
I
yeah.
think that's one of the conflicts I bring in. It's like, why are you acting like this is so hard,
Yeah.
Caroline?
Yeah.
That's just part of it. Yeah. I know.
So much of it does come down to like how we're socialized, right? Like to be hard on ourselves or to find, you know, the places where we're doing it wrong or like all the things, right? That I have to do it exactly right or I shouldn't do it at all. All that stuff is stuff that was taught to us. So it makes sense. It makes sense that we have a hard time or we, you know, don't feel like we know what we're doing or that it matters that we know what we're doing. It's okay if we don't know what we're doing, but there's that moment in our heads that's like, well, if I don't know what I'm doing, I shouldn't do it. Well, why not?
I know I have this funny thing. I'm like, I was a B student at art. It's like, I was an A student in so many things, but I was a B student in
Oh,
art. It was
interesting.
like this thing that I can't pursue that because I got a B. And
Okay, oh my
it's
goodness.
still there in the background sometimes. Yeah.
And that B
Along
was
with the,
just, oh, sorry, I was just going to say that B was just somebody's opinion.
I
It was
know.
just somebody's opinion a long time ago.
Well, and it was so public as well. That's what I didn't like about art at school is that you had to do all your thinking and trying around other people. I love just having my own space to do that because, you know, it's messy for a long time. But people don't walk around me now quietly, not saying much when I'm making a big fat mess. So I get to do that now, whereas you had to produce something pretty good, pretty quick when you were, you know, 20 in a room.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That's not how it happens.
So true, hey. So kind of thinking about any obstacles that you might come up with when, you know, when you're making something new, how do you usually deal with these?
Oh, I never run into
You
obstacles.
don't? Oh my
Never,
goodness,
ever,
that's amazing.
I live a charmed life. Obstacles. So I find the best way to deal with obstacles is a bit like we were saying, really, it's just accept them because if I accept them because they're part of the process, it goes a lot smoother. And obstacle, I try when I'm not overtired or cranky. I try and just sort of see what the obstacle is because it's usually telling you something. So it's telling, you know, what it is either telling me I'm too tired and it's just time to walk away, time to think about it a bit more. It's telling me that there's something I haven't quite figured out yet. So have a little figure out of things or how will I figure that out or. It's just telling you a story about the process, which is not always easy to do, but I am getting better at being gentler, like I said, because once you put in conflict with it, that's when you kind of they get bigger, I think. It then becomes personal. I'm no good. I'll never get this. just everything can come tumbling in. So walk away, have a cup of tea, come back tomorrow, try some stuff, take expectation off. It's usually, my obstacles are usually that I've brought the outside in and I'm being critical through made up people's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to come back to it being me, just doing what the next thing, mixing some green or enjoying that shape there, you know, just bring it back to that. But it's not always easy. Or I eat a bag of chips. Depending on the day. Yeah.
And sometimes go ahead, Jordana.
Sorry, it does take some like mental discipline, doesn't it, to think that way. I think because you two are both coaches, that you could have had some training in that, it maybe comes a little bit easier to recognize those thoughts and stop and think about them and not just like throw your hands up in the air and say, oh my god, I can't do this. to like, you know, think about it in a bit more considered way. And
Get me wrong, it doesn't come easy. I spend 65% of my time pushing away those thoughts.
Okay.
That's kind of, that's part of the balance, I think. And that's why when we said, why is it so hard? It's because all of that stuff comes in and you have to work really hard to keep the space around you clean and free from that. And that takes a lot of work and a lot of energy. So yeah, don't worry, it's not easy.
Okay.
Yeah. It's definitely not. And I don't think it ever becomes easy either. I think it becomes a little bit more practiced, you know, that we are like, oh, okay, kind of like meditation, right? When you do it and then you're like, oh, there's a thought, you know, there's another one. It's never gonna not happen.
Yeah.
Like we just get used to, oh, that's a thought, let it go. You know, a little faster or a little sooner than we would have 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 minutes ago, whatever, right? Like it just becomes something we've practiced more.
Well, I had a really interesting conversation with a friend of mine, and we were talking about what was going on in studios, and I was going, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do for this show, and oh, I've got nothing to show. I've got, you know, I went down all the kind of what this would look like to someone else. I'm a mess. God knows what I'm doing. And then she said, from 1 to 10, how happy are you in your creative practice? And I wrote down an 8. I was like, when I'm actually here doing it, I'm having a great time. But it's this other justification that, again, it's that pushing away those thoughts. It was just interesting how down on the whole thing I was, and yet when asked how much I enjoy, you know, how much do you enjoy sitting and painting and drawing, or sitting and writing, how much do I enjoy painting, I was like up there at 80%. So if I could just do more of that would be great.
I think it's such a great point when you say that it's so often like this external thing that's coming in and creating that unease or that feeling of like it should be different, that that's not coming from inside of you.
Yeah.
And noticing that, I think, is really helpful too, right? Like, oh, that's not even me. That's not even mine. That's like, that means it doesn't have to be part of this, you know?
Yeah. And you pick the worst selection of people to look through the eyes of.
Yeah. Like,
they're not the kind people that you usually meet. It's like, you know.
It's true. Yeah. Thank you so much for this conversation, Caroline. I've just loved talking to you.
Thank you so much, guys.
Yeah. Yes. I love hearing about how you got to where you are and knowing that someone else across the ocean who's feeling the same way I'm feeling a lot of the time is always reassuring.
I know, I want to ask you guys lots of questions too, so we'll catch up, and then I'll find out your guys's thoughts.
Yes, definitely.
In the meantime, where can people find you online if they would like to know more?
Instagram is at Stitch Pictures By, and I've got a website, stitchedpictures.com.
Lovely. And we'll have that information in the show notes as well. So thank you so much for being with us. And I can't wait to see how everything unfolds in your studio as you explore.
Good luck with that, Caroline. Yeah. Thank you. Wish me luck. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Now it's time for our Ask Us Anything section, where we answer questions from listeners to help them with their creative practice. So, Paige, what's today's question?
Yeah, thank you, Jordana. This question comes from Anne in Australia. Hi, Paige and Jordana. Love listening to you. Paige, I saw a post you did on Instagram where you talked about not putting off a project until you've finished some fill-in-the-blank thing or activity. I definitely do this. I tell myself I have to wait until I've finished a class or brought new materials or whatever, or bought new materials or whatever before I can do the thing I want. But it turns out there's always something I have to do first, and I end up never getting the project I want to do done, or only getting to do it for a few minutes because I've used so much time on whatever I had to do first. How do I just do it anyway, even when I really feel like I have to finish something else first? I also want to say thanks for sharing everything you do with this podcast. Hearing women from all over the world talk about their work is so inspiring, and I love it. Keep them coming. This is a great question.
Yes. I think every single creative person will understand this feeling, no?
Yes, I think so too. Well, let me ask you, have you ever done this?
Oh,
this
God.
This is a big one for me.
Yeah, I do it all the time. All the time. You know, on one hand, I get a lot of decluttering done in my apartment. On the other hand, like she said, I only end up getting a few minutes to do my artwork because I'm like, oh no, I've wasted my time away. So I love a bit of aquatic cleaning. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. How about you?
Cleaning is also, yes, I totally do this. Very often for me, I will tell myself, well, I just need to finish that one like online course I started taking, or I just need to like go to the store and buy a thing before I can do that, you know? And at this point though, I have noticed that like, this is a tactic that I use. This is a procrastination tactic that I use. I'm on to myself at this point. So that has helped me a lot to, you know, have that practice of noticing and seeing like, oh, Paige, you're doing the thing. Okay. So this is the question I ask myself. What could I do now? What could I do now? And when I have this open-ended question of like, it's not what should I do? It's an important distinction, right? I'm not trying to force myself to do something, because if there's a procrastination tactic coming into play, it's very often because some element of the thing I feel like I should do is a little bit scary to me for some reason. You know, maybe I think I don't know how to do it, or maybe it's a little bit too far out of my comfort zone, or maybe whatever, right? So when I ask myself the question, what could I do right now? And I make it something small, that really helps me to just kind of like lessen the tension around it, you know, and come to a place of like, kind of like playfulness or interest and curiosity, you know, like it's no longer about the thing I'm supposed to do. It's about a possibility. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How about you? How do you get around this?
Yeah, I think, similar to like what you just said, I know now when I'm you know, putting something off.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends. Sometimes I'm like, okay, this is just part of my process.
Right.
I'm going to 10 minutes tidying, because obviously I feel like I need to do that for whatever reason.
Yes.
And then I will sit down and play and have fun.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends on my frame of mind sometimes. So sometimes, yeah, I'll just do that for 10 minutes. And I obviously want to do that. I need to get that done. I'll sit down and do it, and I'll get, you know, and then I'll start to do what I really want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Other times I'll just kind of take a moment, sit down, have three deep breaths and kind of think about what I want to be doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And to kind of flip the feeling, I might just, you know, because I love magazines, just like read my magazine for 10 minutes. Like I'm reading, but I'm also kind of processing in my mind, what do I actually want to make today?
Like, yeah.
What is my small goal for what I want to sit down and do for the next mm-hmm. hour or however long? And that then also kind of calms the kind of, sometimes it's frustration, sometimes like it's, I feel a bit nervous to like start something new, or whatever that feeling is that's kind of making me apprehensive about starting, kind of gets calmed down and turned into a small goal. And the mm-hmm. magazine's like a transition into starting the thing that I want to make.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. Because that really eases you in.
It does. Yeah.
And it's enjoyable.
Mm.
Yeah. Another thing that I think it could be a really interesting question to ask is like, in 5 years, or even 1 year, or even 1 week, is it going to matter that I did this other task that I think I really have to do right now?
Mm.
Or is it going to matter that I did my artwork that I want to do? Like, which one is going to make more of an impact on my life long term?
Yeah.
You know, because I think when we focus on the things that are really trivial daily tasks, you know, that, you know, need to get done, yes, but also do they?
Mm.
You know, like, is it gonna really hurt if the laundry waits another few hours to get folded, or even till tomorrow? Is it? You know, it's just a curiosity that we can bring to the question that is light, you know, and there is no right answer to it. It might actually be that you find like, yes, I do have to do this thing. That's also fine, you know. But if you're finding yourself again and again and again, really wanting to do a thing and just not able to get to it, it's worth asking some of these questions about what's getting in the way and how much it really matters in terms of priorities in your life. Maybe they are the priorities, you know. And then you know, once you've kind of interrogated it, but that process of interrogation and like really listening to yourself and really asking yourself, what do I really want to do? You know, can be helpful.
Yeah, because I think if, from my experience, if there's something I want to make and it's, I'm thinking about it a lot and it keeps coming back and it keeps like knocking on the door.
Mm-hmm.
But then I keep thinking, no, but I need to do this first.
Mm-hmm.
That is like a tension. For me, it's like a tension in my stomach that's building up and building up and building up.
Yeah.
And whatever creative energy that is that needs to be released, the only way you're going to release it is by sitting down and just starting something small. Like you said, like you always say, like, just do 10 minutes, just do 1 minute, you know, just do the smallest thing possible to start with. And honoring that feeling in your body that is telling you, I need to be made, like, please make this thing. Yeah. And realizing it's not just, you know, it's an energy within you, and you need to honor that. As much as you may feel you want to do all those other things, this is equally, if not more important. So
yeah. There is something like, as you put it that way, like something that really I think is so helpful is to think of the creative urge and that that like voice, that little voice that you're describing, like as its own entity that you have a relationship with. You know, it's coming and asking to play with you. It wants to engage with you. And it's up to you whether you say yes to it or not, you know. But you have an opportunity to say yes to it. Very often, it's an awful lot of fun to say yes, you know.
You're never going to regret sitting down and doing your art.
Yeah, I never have. And, you know, there's a lot of other things you might well regret doing with your time. But yeah, that's just not one of them, is it?
But you're definitely going to regret having spent an hour cleaning the house and only having 10 minutes to do your artwork.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, that it really does come down to that zooming out moment, right?
Like, yes,
kind of seeking a broader, wider perspective on your life. You know, what do you really want? How do you want to spend your time? What are your priorities? And see what happens from there.
Yeah. And as well, realizing that it's not going to get solved in a day. Like, it's a constant process.
That's right. Yeah, this doesn't go away. Yeah.
No, yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't.
So it will keep happening. And the more you can notice it, as we've talked about, like the more you pay attention. Oh, there it is. There it is. I need to fill in the blank first. The easier it gets to then do, you know, redirect yourself, do something else in that process. So thank you so much for this question, Anne. It was great. Very interesting question and very helpful question, I think, for a lot of people. So yeah, to anyone who would like to send us a question, we love to hear from you. And thank you also, Anne, for this beautiful feedback. We really appreciate that. If you would like to send us something, you can do that on Instagram. We are at the Creativity Cafe 21 on Instagram. Or you can also, what was it, Jordana? I always need you to say this part.
That's okay. Yeah. If you want to send your question through Apple Podcasts app, if you go down to the bottom of the Creativity Cafe page, you can leave a review. So in that review box, you can leave your question and we will read it and we will include it in one of our episodes.
Thank you so much, everyone. Talk to you next time.
Thanks for joining us today on the Creativity Cafe.
If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review and share it with your friends.
And follow us on Instagram at thecreativitycafe21 for special updates and sneak peeks behind the scenes.
Catch you again next time. Keep creating.